Live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's Current Sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a star receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shot fake one time.
We're talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
Beautiful people, welcome to this hump day edition of WKAR's Current Sports. That's right, it is Wednesday, June 2nd, 2021. I hope you all are well out there. We've got another great episode of Current Sports coming right to your ear. A ton of discussion on today's show. And later on this hour, I am going to address what was last night's incredible slate in the NBA playoffs. I mean, just so much fun. Just so much fun watching yesterday's games, including, for me, Dame Dollar doing what he did last night in a losing effort, in a game that went to double overtime in a losing effort. Damian Lillard still, though, put on a game that I call simply just pure art last night. I mean, it was a 50-plus point game performance in the loss against the Denver Nuggets. But, I mean, you look at how that game panned out, man. If it wasn't for Damian Lillard, this game would have been over in regulation. He hit big three after big three, made big decision after big decision. Now, even though the Nuggets are staring at a 3-2 series deficit, Damian Lillard was brilliant. I'm going to have more on his performance last night. I'm going to briefly touch upon the Brooklyn Nets beating the Boston Celtics 123-109 to end the playoff run of the Celtics. Brooklyn won that series 4-1. And there's also some news coming out of Boston. And I'm going to give you that news in just a moment. And then also later on this hour, I'm going to dive into last night's blowout victory for the Phoenix Suns over LeBron James, the quote-unquote king, and the Los Angeles Lakers, who were without Anthony Davis due to that groin injury that he sustained over the weekend. And I got some points to make when it comes to LeBron James apologists out there who look at his performance last night, which was subpar to say the least, alongside all of his teammates, and say, well, it's LeBron's teammates and not him. As why they fell in that game. Look, it's equal opportunity here, folks. But you hold more of the responsibility when you are LeBron James, when you are the best player on the team without his fellow superstar, Anthony Davis. You got to go off in that game. You got to be aggressive. And in typical LeBron James fashion, like he has done throughout much of his career, he deferred to his teammates. And when he clearly saw that they weren't making shots, he continued to feed them the ball. Puzzling. So I'll get to that game later on this hour as well. But again, I got some news I want to push along to you guys. A few stories here that I need to address. First, locally, how about this? John Beilein will be a senior advisor and a director of player development for the Detroit Pistons. So that's pretty shocking stuff. I don't think many of us saw that one coming. You know, he spent 12 seasons as the head men's basketball coach of the Michigan Wolverines. Then he had that brief, and I mean very, very brief stint as head coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers. No, LeBron James was not over there. That was a team that was purely deficient talent-wise, not a championship contender. And Johnny B's college coaching just really didn't translate to the next level. But now he's back and now heading to Detroit. So, again, he's a senior advisor and a director of player development. He was spotted in the stands at multiple Pistons games. I did notice that this past year. And now this move marks his official return to the NBA after leaving the Cavs. Again, I told you, he was only there for a cup of coffee. Just 54 games into his inaugural season back in 2019-2020. So, again, you know, and you heard reports about John Beilein just not having a great finger on the pulse of the NBA players who were coaching, who were on the Cleveland Cavaliers at the time. He just didn't really mesh with them, and there was a bit of awkwardness in the locker room. All right? So, yeah, that did not work out. He resigned from his position. In February of 2020. So Cleveland just won 14 games under his watch. So when it comes to Beilein, I mean, he's best known for his tenure at Michigan from 2007 to 2019. And that was in a stretch in which he became the school's winningest coach. He led the Wolverines to two national championship game appearances in 2013 and 2018. I remember that 2013 stint very well because that was when I was a rookie reporter, professional rookie reporter over at Channel 6 News. And that's when Michigan and Trey Burke, they fell to Louisville. Rick Pitino was the head coach there. But, you know, that title has been vacated since due to the whole controversy surrounding that season for Louisville. But he also won two Big Ten tournament championships in 2017 and 2018, and also had 10 NCAA Big Dance tournament appearances. And 11 of his players at U of M were drafted into the NBA during his time. And, you know, we see a few in the NBA right now. You know, right now, I mean, Tim Hardaway Jr. is the guy that I'm really seeing that is a former player under Johnny B that I'm really seeing doing his thing at the next level. So congratulations to John Beilein. I think, you know, Beilein is a great basketball mind. And, you know, when you look at what the Detroit Pistons are doing right now, we all know my Detroit Pistons are in full rebuild mode. And I really like what Troy Weaver, who is the current general manager of the Detroit Pistons, I must say, what he has been doing has been pretty impressive. You know, I don't think that casual fans may have noticed, but, you know, there are a few things going on for the Detroit Pistons. You know, we all know they have been on the bottom of the NBA for really more than 10 years now. And, you know, I'm not saying record-wise. I mean, when you look at the Pistons right now and you look at the job that Troy Weaver is doing, you can't grade his success record wise, at least right now, because he is in full rebuild mode. And you guys know how I felt about this past year for the Detroit Pistons. I wanted them to just continue to lose games so that they would continue to be one of the bottom feeders in the NBA so that they could land possibly the top pick in this year's NBA draft. You know, so, because they need talent right now. They need young talent that they can build upon for years to come. But, you know, it didn't take long for Weaver to really, like, put his stamp on the Detroit Pistons. And he's made a ton of moves that have really given the Pistons, I believe, a strong young core to build around and have given fans like me some hope for the first time in years. A lot of moves. I mean, look, signing Jeremy Grant in the offseason. You know, Grant has evolved from a role player into really one of the best wings in the game of basketball. He's been a big part of the Pistons' growth. He actually finished second this year when it comes to the NBA's Most Improved Player Award. We mentioned that on Current Sports last week as Julius Randle of the New York Knicks actually donned that honor. But Jeremy Grant was right there at number two. Love his game. He is really, I think Jeremy Grant is really symbolic of Weaver's ability to see past stats and really evaluate a guy's potential as to what he can really be in the league. Also, he drafted Killian Hayes, Sadiq Bey, and Isaiah Stewart. You know, if the draft were done again, these three will probably go in the top 10. Bey is breaking records left and right. Hayes has looked pretty good this past season and confident, you know, especially when he came back from that injury. And, you know, Isaiah Stewart, you know, one of the best big centers in the second half of the league. So I really like that. Also, Weaver was able to trade veteran guard Derrick Rose for a flyer in Dennis Smith Jr., who has shown flashes. How about taking a chance on vets like Mason Plumlee, who, you know, this past season was nearly averaging a double-double, and also throw in Wayne Ellington in that conversation, who was one of the NBA's top three point specialists this past season. That's mind-boggling when I saw just how well Wayne Ellington was shooting from the three-point line when you evaluate his stats from this past season. And we all know Detroit, the Pistons, have been severely lacking a three-point shooter for a long, long time. Then I can bring up high flyer Josh Jackson, Detroit's own Josh Jackson, who, you know, he had lottery talent that really hadn't been realized. And he was a nice surprise and was you know, he started to get consistent with his shot this past year. Saben Lee, he drafted him in the second round of the NBA draft. And he got a lot of minutes due to some injury woes for the Pistons. He shipped out Svi Mykhailiuk for Hamidou Diallo, a player with a much higher ceiling when it comes to my evaluation of him. And I think he's a better fit for the team. Then he took a chance on Tyler Cook. That paid off dividends this past year. He signed Frank Jackson to a two-way contract. I mean, this dude, Trey Weaver, did all of this in his first season. And also throw in this, he did all of this. He made all of those moves while being tethered to Blake Griffin, who, as we all know now, is out there in Brooklyn trying to win a championship with the big three of Kevin Durant, James Harden, and Kyrie Irving. But he did all of that tethered to Blake Griffin and his awful, awful contract, and not really having any real assets to work with. So, man, I love the basketball mind of Trey Weaver. I was very impressed with the moves he made to acquire talent that, again, had a lot of potential but just hadn't been realized yet, but began to be realized this past season. The Pistons have so much to build upon, and now you look at it, and they have, you know, what, four draft picks in the upcoming draft, and you know, he hopes to add even more impact talent, you know, with some of the best young core players in the NBA today. So I think the Pistons' future is looking bright. Trey Weaver has an eye for talent, and I think John Beilein, who has more of an eye for talent in the college game, of course, I think Johnny Beilein is going to be able to pinpoint some great untapped talent, potential talent that the college within the college game that could possibly don the red, white, and royal blue. So I love this move. You know, John Beilein, yeah, he may not be a head coach in the NBA, but he is a fantastic basketball mind, and I'm looking forward to seeing how he works with Trey Weaver. So we'll see what happens there, but I like that story a lot. So from that story to this one, again, I told you I got a few stories to address before I dive into some more NBA talk and recap what happened last night. But I want to let you guys know that Mel Tucker has moved really quickly to replace a really key member of Michigan State football staff. And, you know, he stayed within the Big Ten. So according to the Wisconsin State Journal, and this was reported yesterday morning, Tucker hired Saeed Khalif away from Wisconsin yesterday to replace former director of player personnel Scott Aligo. If you remember Scott Aligo, he left the Spartans for the same position at his alma mater out in Kansas. So Michigan State football has replaced Scott Aligo, former director of player personnel, with Saeed Khalif from Wisconsin. Now, Tucker has direct ties to Wisconsin. He played at Wisconsin back in 1995. That's before entering the coaching ranks as a grad assistant with Michigan State under Nick Saban back in 97. So the hiring, you know, it comes just after the NCAA lifted its year-plus recruiting dead period on Tuesday, and that's something that we highlighted on yesterday's Current Sports. And if you missed that, again, simply go to WKAR.org to listen to that, and I give you kind of a preview as to what, you know, Michigan State football and Mel Tucker and his staff, what they plan to do now that they get the chance to really hit the road and be face-to-face with recruits. But a little bit about Saeed Khalif. He spent the past 4 years as the Badgers' director of player personnel under head coach Paul Christ, helping oversee their recruiting and working alongside MSU tight ends coach Ted Gilmore. Khalif is a former Georgia Tech defensive lineman from 1983 to 87, who had a few brief stints playing in the NFL. He spent 2013 to 2017 at his alma mater as an assistant director of player personnel. He broke into the college ranks with 2 seasons as D coordinator and D line coach at Savannah State in the football championship subdivision, so the FCS. Prior to that, Khalif coached high school football in Georgia and New Jersey. That's 2 areas that Tucker and his staff have concentrated their recruiting efforts at. So I think the reason why, you know, when you look into this, the reason why Mel Tucker made this move to hire Khalif so quickly, again, because the dead period ended just a day ago. I mean, you really want to get on this. You really want to hit the ground running, and you don't want to have any question marks or any holes within your staff, because you know that other programs out there who are at full power, who have all of their guys, are out there hitting the recruiting trail, and it's all about competing to try and get the talent that you need, that you believe is going to take you to the next level. So Mel Tucker didn't want to waste any time. Aligo out, Khalif in. Let's put him right to work. So, and you know, Aligo was I think he was a major part of Mel Tucker's staff. He really was. I mean, you know, in doing some reading here, you know, one of his biggest things under Tucker was really retooling Michigan State's recruiting strategy and helping to divide scouting into high school players and also college athletes due to how the NCAA transfer portal has just changed the game. You know, you see all of these colleges across the nation now losing players to the transfer portal, just like Michigan State football. You know, it's funny. I've had a few conversations with Michigan State football fans out there who say, wow, you know, after that spring game, it's like every other day Michigan State football was announcing another departure from their roster that was hitting the transfer portal. And I said, yeah, but so does like every other Division I program out there. You know, the same thing happened with just about every other Division I program out there. You know, as these young kids realize that the transfer portal gives them more power, more mobility, and gives them an opportunity to possibly go to somewhere where they feel like they are better suited, better fit. And again, it's not going to work out for everybody. I think some of these young men are making the wrong decision and should just, you know, wait it out. But, you know, how can I argue with them when the NCAA gives them very little power, no compensation? So use the power that they do give you. If you feel like you can put yourself in a better position to be seen at the next level, and make your NFL dream come true, then hey, enter the transfer portal and take that gamble. But that gamble is not always going to pay off. And I think players will learn that as we get deeper and deeper and again to begin to move year after year with this transfer portal experiment. So a big loss, and Khalif has some big shoes to fill, certainly. But again, you know, Saeed Khalif is a guy with a good track record, and you know, he did a great job at Wisconsin. All right. So what I want to do right now, again, NBA playoff chatter coming. I also, though, after this first break, I have an update concerning the Naomi Osaka story. Now, we've been following this extensively here at WKAR's Current Sports. You all have heard my thoughts concerning where I stand with Naomi Osaka's silent protest, if you will, to try and raise awareness for mental health, deciding not to talk to the media, not to talk to the press, because she's been feeling anxiety. Her mental health hasn't been in the best state, and talking to the press has contributed. She feels as though that has contributed to her mental state. So, you know, she made the decision to not talk to the press to try and raise awareness on others who may be struggling with mental health. There's an update concerning that story, and then I'll dive into my thoughts on the NBA slate last night, and also an update concerning Japan. Yeah. And the Olympics. And a pretty big name in the world of sports is calling for the postponement of the Tokyo Olympics to next year because of COVID-19. Yes, we may be doing pretty well here in America, but other parts of the world, like Tokyo, are still struggling. That and more. You are listening to the Wednesday Hump Day edition of WKAR's Current Sports. All right, welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, and I have an update on the Naomi Osaka media protest or media silence, I should say, at the French Open that, you know, eventually led to her pulling out of the French Open and making that announcement over the Memorial Day holiday. It was really stunning, a stunning withdrawal. I thought that, you know, she would just, again, continue to stay silent, not talk to the press, and just get fine, continue to get fine, right? But, you know, then you heard that, you know, the upper echelons in the world of tennis, the powers that be in the world of tennis, they basically like threatened her that, okay, you know, if you continue not to talk, then it would mean that you would be at default and would not be able to compete at the French Open, which, as you heard on the Tuesday edition of the show, I think is totally ludicrous. But I also don't totally agree with the protest of not talking to the media for Naomi Osaka. Again, I still stand behind my words here. If Naomi Osaka, no, not if, it's clear that she is dealing with some mental health issues, go get help and not play tennis if it gives you that much anxiety. I mean, we're talking about the highest paid female athlete this past year. Not like she needs to play for money right now. She's got a lot of it. Mental health comes first. Health comes first. Not talking to the media as a means to protest mental health, I think that doesn't do anything. You know, if anything, you want to be vocal about it and talk about the issues that you're experiencing. Talk about how you feel, right? Not talking to the media. I mean, look, every player out there, every superstar out there has to face the music as a major athlete and must talk to the media, even though there are some vultures out there in the press. There are those who do want to just tear you down. But as a superstar, that is a part of the job. And you can't just ignore that. But again, if you can't handle that, And if it's taking a toll on your mind that much, then withdraw from the game completely, get healthy, and then return. That's how I see it. So, an update here, folks. And this was reported, I believe, yesterday, just a little after 2 o'clock. So a little after I got off the airwaves yesterday. But the leaders of the four Grand Slam tennis tournaments, they reacted yesterday to Osaka's withdrawal from the French Open. And they promised to address players' concerns about mental health. So this pledge came in a statement signed by the same four administrators who threatened the possibility of disqualification or suspension for Osaka on Sunday if she continued to skip news conferences and not talk to the media. Osaka, who is a four-time major champion, the number two ranked player, she was fined $15,000 when she didn't speak to reporters after her first round dub at Roland Garros this past weekend. And the next day, on Monday, Osaka, on Memorial Day, pulled out of the tournament entirely. And she said on social media that she experiences, quote, huge waves of anxiety, end quote, before meeting with the media and revealing that she has, quote, suffered long bouts of depression. Folks, that is very, very serious. I mean, you know, how many times have we here on WKAR's Current Sports, you know, when talking about youth sports and our youth today, how many times have we talked about the suicide rates and the rates of depression for our youth in today's world? You know, Osaka is a young woman at 23 and is dealing with those same pressures, those same anxieties. And social media doesn't help, especially when you are in the public eye and are looked at as one of the best athletes in the world. There are going to be haters out there. There are going to be some that look at your success and will try to spit on it because they are jealous and want to make themselves feel better, to be honest. And that's the definition of a coward. But when you constantly read that stuff and when you are active on social media, because that's what we do as millennials and, you know, the generation behind me, Gen Zers, right? We are always on social media. It's a way for us to connect and be, I don't know, some, I don't even know if I could use the word present, but to be connected, if you will. And Osaka seems to enjoy social media, but there also is that dark place as well that can become a rabbit hole. So I suggested on yesterday's show that she just take just a break, period, from social media. I have to do that myself, man, where I just have to get off Instagram, get off Twitter, you know, get off those platforms, get off Facebook, especially Facebook. There's so much negativity on my Facebook timeline. I'm thinking about unfriending a few people. But my goodness, man, you know, reading that stuff constantly, it can get to you, especially in Osaka's case when it's directly about you. So, you know, when it comes to the rule, tennis players are required to attend news conferences if requested to do so. And Grand Slam rules allow for fines up to $20,000 if they don't show up. So this is a bit of what Tuesday's statement said from those in charge of the French Open, Wimbledon, the U.S. Open, and the Australian Open. Quote, on behalf of the Grand Slams, we wish to offer Naomi Osaka our support and assistance in any way possible as she takes time away from the court. She is an exceptional athlete, and we look forward to her return as soon as she deems appropriate. Mental health is a very challenging issue, which deserves our utmost attention. It is both complex and personal, as what affects one individual does not necessarily affect another. We commend Naomi for sharing her words and the pressures and anxieties that she is feeling, and we empathize with the unique pressures tennis players may face. So again, that came from those in charge of the French Open, Wimbledon, U.S. Open, and the Australian Open. So they are going to try and approach this sympathetically and talk to Naomi and communicate with her about what she is going through But I think they are really in a tough position here, man. The big mistake that I think they made was, you know, the powers that be at the French Open made was just, you know, just saying that, okay, if you continue to not talk to the press, you can't play. I think that's ridiculous. That hurts you, if anything. I mean, people flock to their televisions to watch this incredibly talented young woman play the game of tennis. So why wouldn't you want her on televisions across the world? And instead, because she doesn't talk to the press, you booed her, basically, from the tournament. I don't agree with that. Just fine her. Attack her pocketbook and keep it moving, man. So many athletes, though, have come out and supported her. You know, I mentioned Serena Williams coming out and saying that she just wants to give her a hug. And, you know, everybody's built differently. You know, Ann Lee, 20-year-old American, after winning her first round match on Tuesday, said, quote, "It's hard. Nobody really knows what anyone is going through, no matter how much they choose to show on the outside. I had no idea about her, but I respect her openness. Our generation is becoming more open and open, which can be a good thing and also a bad thing at times. I hope she's doing okay." So, yeah. You know, Venus Williams also said each person is different. Gael Monfils said that he could relate to Osaka's concerns to an extent. Quote, "It's a very tough situation for her. I feel for her because I have been struggling quite a lot as well. What she's dealing with is even tough for me to even judge because I think she has massive pressure from many things. I think she's quite young. She's handling it well. Sometimes we want maybe too much from her. So sometimes, for sure, she is going to make some mistakes." So it's a very serious conversation. I would like to hear from any of you out there who have battled or is battling depression. How do you deal with that? How do you cope with that? You know, and again, every person is different, you know, especially for Naomi Osaka. You know, I'm pretty sure I'm not speaking to any, you know, top five, you know, tennis players or top five athletes out there. Maybe I am. Who knows? You know, who knows? But, you know, that's a different kind of pressure. But, you know, depression is a real thing that hundreds of thousands of Americans and probably, you know, millions of people really deal with across this world. How do you deal with it? Those who do have more good days than bad. How do you do that? I would love to hear from you guys. That's a very real conversation that you know, I'm certainly open to having here on Current Sports. You know, I've had many of my friends who have battled depression, three that I can just think about off the top of my head, who are winning the battle, but they do have many bad days, you know? So 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. And thank you to Naomi, because I guess, you know, if it wasn't for her right now being open like this, we wouldn't be having this very serious conversation on Current Sports and a much needed one for many out there, you know. So call us and leave us a voicemail at that number. Again, 517-355-9527. I'll play that on tomorrow's Current Sports. You can also go to facebook.com/WKAR News. Weigh in anywhere there on our Facebook page. And you can also tweet us. Tweet me directly at Al Martin, WKAR, or tweet the show at WKAR News. What I want to do right now is hit our final break. And I want to close the show on two different topics here. The NBA playoffs. And also, you get my thoughts on whether or not I believe the Tokyo Olympics should be pushed to 2022. Due to what in the world is going on out there with COVID-19. That and more. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. All right, welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. And man, the NBA playoffs are heating up. And, you know, we've got some first round matchups that are on the verge of being could put two that already are in the bag, you know, as the Milwaukee Bucks. You know, they have now moved on to the second round of the NBA playoffs, and they will be playing the Brooklyn Nets, who made slight work of the Boston Celtics last night, 123-109. And also, speaking of the Boston Celtics, I want to let you guys know that Danny Ainge, famed Boston Celtics player, who has been the president of basketball operations for the Celtics for a while, Danny Ainge is stepping down. And check this. The franchise is elevating head coach Brad Stevens to now president of basketball operations. So Brad Stevens is taking the job of Danny Ainge as Danny Ainge is stepping down. And now the Celtics have to hire a new head coach. Isn't that wild? That's pretty wild. You know, Brad Stevens is one of the best young coaches in the game today. But, you know, it's being reported that, you know, Ainge, he had been contemplating leaving the job for several months. And had been talking about possible succession plans with ownership. And Stevens has been described as worn down with coaching since the bubble last year. And he welcomed the chance to make the transition to the front office. So even though he is such a talented head coach, Stevens is worn down and he doesn't want to do it, at least right now. So, hey, make me the president of basketball operations, you know, and I want to replace Danny Ainge. So we'll see who Brad Stevens moves in as his successor over there out in Boston. But man, there's always just some wild stories in the NBA, man, isn't it? I did not see that one coming at all. Heck, I didn't even see, you know, the John Beilein story coming at all either. So that's wild. But anyway, the Brooklyn Nets move on now, and they will play the Milwaukee Bucks in what I anticipate to be one of the most fun series in all of the playoffs. I can't wait for that series. Giannis Antetokounmpo, can he knock off the big three? For me, I gave you guys my NBA Finals picks before the playoffs began, and I still think it's going to be Brooklyn versus Utah. Giannis is going to have his hands full against you know, Giannis and company. They're going to have their hands full in trying to stop, you know, the powerhouse that is the Brooklyn Nets. Last night also, the guy who stole the night in sports, even though he came out on the short end of the stick in a losing effort, that man is Damian Lillard. Dame Dolla. His heroics in a 55-point output were unreal. Unreal. I mean, this dude could not miss in the fourth quarter and in those two overtimes. And when he finally did, and it gave the Nuggets a little cushion, it was all she wrote. The Nuggets to be able to hang in. Props to the Nuggets and Joker, man, who I think is going to be Nikola Jokic, the Joker, as he's affectionately known in the NBA. he's going to be the NBA's MVP. He was brilliant last night as well. He had 38 points, 11 rebounds, and he was one assist shy of a triple-double last night. He had 9 assists to go along with those 38 points and 11 rebounds. But Damian Lillard, man, he was hitting video game-like three-pointers, which he has done throughout his career in the clutch. This isn't new. Dame time, when he points at his wrist, you know, like a clock and yells out Dame time, that's a real thing, folks, because more times than not, he hits big shots when the game is on the line. And he did that last night. And three-pointer after three-pointer, I mean, he hit one from the right wing that banked off the glass. Then he hit one, I think, tied it again, where the defender was right in his grill, right in his eye hole, and he was able to find the bottom of the net. I mean, I could not believe what I was watching. And you had so many stars across the world of sports, not just in the game of basketball, but across the world of sports, tweeting at this dude just in complete awe. You know, guys like Kevin Durant, and I don't have the exact tweets up at me, But I was watching, you know, post-game report with Ernie Johnson, Shaquille O'Neal, Charles Barkley, and Draymond Green, who was filling in once again for one of the guys. This time he was filling in for Kenny the Jet Smith. And they were bringing up the tweets on the television on the NBA on TNT. And, you know, Kevin Durant tweeted, you know, I'm at a loss for words. He basically said, I'm at a loss for words trying to describe what I just watched. Then you had NFL quarterback Russell Wilson giving Dame Dollar his props. You had John Morant, who's still competing in the NBA playoffs, giving his thoughts on that just incredible, incredible performance. And, you know, John Morant, they ball out tonight against Utah. It was awe-inspiring. But again, you know, and it kind of reminds me, you remember when Michael Jordan went off for 63 against Larry Bird and the Boston Celtics, and also what was a double overtime game on the road at the Garden. I believe it was a first-round matchup there, and the Bulls got eliminated. But you look at that performance, and you say, wow, that was one for the books, even though they lost in double overtime. It really was Jordan-esque for me because of how clutch it was, how mesmerizing it was. So, you know, there may be a documentary based on what Dame was able to do in that game, man. It was that good. But now Denver leads that series 3-2, and they are on the verge of eliminating Portland unless Portland can, you know, find a way to push this thing to a game 7. But Dame did all he could do. You know, you had C.J. McCollum step out of bounds on a crucial possession. He had a missed dunk by one of the big men as well when Dame found him perfect in stride. Opportunities were there, and Dame just didn't get enough help last night. And then you had that final game, which was going on at the same time as the Trailblazers and Nuggets. You know, it's a crime that the Trailblazers and Nuggets was on NBA TV, where it was blocked out for many people, including myself. I had to go deep into the dark web to find that game live. That's the game that should have been on TNT instead of the Lakers and Suns, because the Lakers and Suns was a snooze fest. The Lakers didn't show up to play at all. It was a 115-85 drubbing, folks. I mean, this thing wasn't even close. And Anthony Davis wasn't there. I've always said this too, man. When Anthony Davis is either not available and he's not playing, or when he is playing and he's having a horrible game, the Lakers lose more times than not. It ain't about LeBron James when it comes to this team. He is not the straw that stirs this drink. I'm sorry to say it. And you saw that evidence last night. It was on full display. All right, your boy is out, LeBron. You know, the Robin to your Batman. Well, I think it should be the other way around looking at what happened last night. You know, you being the Robin to his Batman. You had to step up. You had to be aggressive. I said LeBron had to go for 30-plus last night, and he just was just not assertive, not aggressive. He scored 24 points, had 5 rebounds, had 7 assists. And, again, he just completely deferred to his teammates. It's like he didn't even want to take a shot. He was 3-for-10 at halftime and then just took 9 more shots in the second half to finish 9-for-19. In a game like this, where you are completely getting blown out and your teammates aren't showing up, you have to be the alpha male and the self-proclaimed GOAT that you think you are. And if you aren't, and we're judging you by GOAT standards, that was a pitiful effort. Pitiful. You can't perform like that. And, of course, he had the worst plus-minus out of any player out there for the Lakers. He was minus 24 on the court. He played the most minutes. He played 32 minutes last night. But to go 9-for-19, you only shoot 19 shots. You finish with just 24 points. That's inexcusable, man. On a night when your teammates were just pitiful, horrible. I mean, Anthony Drummond, I don't know if I tweeted it out, but I thought it for sure. You know, Andre Drummond and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope looked like they were rocking Detroit Pistons jerseys out there. I had flashbacks to when they were here in Detroit having subpar performances left and right. They were horrible. Dennis Schroeder, what happened to him? He was so good in the last game, and now that brother, he went 0-4 last night, 0-9. 0-9 is what Dennis Schroeder was last night. My goodness. How about Marquise Morris last night? He was the replacement for Anthony Davis. He was just one of two. Just one of two from the floor. You know, then a lack of big bench production. You know, Kyle Kuzma, who has been sorry. I think they really need to trade Kyle Kuzma. He's been sorry, dude. He has performed below expectations time and time again. He had just 15 points last night off the bench. Montrezl Harrell had 9. You know, Marc Gasol couldn't defend. He couldn't defend anything last night. That's the thing with AD. Why I think he's so important, especially in this series, is that, you know, Anthony Davis gives you a forward who can stretch the floor, who can shoot the basketball, but also on the other end, he can defend the interior. And Andre Drummond and Marc Gasol are not great interior defenders, and the Suns had a field day, man, especially the Suns guards. They had a field day last night. Guys like, you know, Cameron Payne, you know, Chris Paul constantly getting in the lane, Mikal Bridges, you know, and then how about the performance of Devin Booker? That's what I mean. You know, when the game is on the line, series is tied 2-2, your superstars have to be superstars. And Devin Booker was a superstar last night. 30 points from Devin Booker. That's the kind of stuff I expected to see out of LeBron James last night. But he didn't show up, man. And, you know, I'm tired of the excuses, the LeBron apologists out there who come at me and say, well, Al, he is hurt. Don't give me that crap. When the dude was sky high flying, you know, catching an alley-oop off the backboard and throwing it down with his head near the rim, courtesy of Alex Caruso, I wasn't hearing that, oh, he's hurt. No, the dude is fine. He is not hurt, okay? He spends $1 million on his body every single year. That ankle injury, I haven't even seen the dude limp throughout this series. He's fine. Stop giving this dude excuses. LeBron is healthy. He just did not show up last night. And when AD is not playing, LeBron doesn't always play well, man. And that's a game that he had to play well, because never before in LeBron James' story career has he stared at a 3-2 deficit in the first round. And if by some miracle the Lakers come back in this series to push it to a game 7 and possibly win the series in game 7, it will be the first time that LeBron James has ever come back from a 3-2 deficit in the first round, because he's never been in this position. So all signs point to the Suns closing this thing out at some point in the next maybe 2 games, maybe the next game. And I thought it was the correct decision. I was asked this question by our guy Alex, one of our dear listeners yesterday, whether or not I would play Anthony Davis in that game 5 last night. And I said no. You know, it's not an elimination game. AD is such a big horse for you. He is the most important player on this roster that, you know, if he isn't 100%, sit him out. And then after that, play him the rest of the series, because you are going to need him, because then you'll be facing elimination. But you want to get him as much rest as possible. You don't want to aggravate a left groin strain. That's a tough injury. But Anthony Davis is going to suit up this next game. And how healthy he will be, I don't know. But if he does not play well, and if he doesn't somehow dig deep and find some guts, LeBron James can't carry this team. And the Lakers will be eliminated from the first round of the NBA playoffs. You're defending NBA champions. And it's a different beast too, man. These are the real NBA playoffs right here. This isn't the bubble. You know, some people say that the bubble was, you know, they give the bubble more credit than a regular NBA playoff game and believe it was more difficult. No, it's not. That was AAU basketball. No fans, no traveling. That kind of atmosphere just allows you to just go out there and just play strictly basketball. When you are having to travel and deal with the fans and deal with crowds, it creates a different atmosphere. It just does. So The bubble champs are on the verge of elimination. We'll see what happens next game. All right, but I'm out of time, folks. I'm going to address, I'll lead tomorrow's show by talking about COVID concerns out in Japan as, again, the Tokyo Olympics they're trying to figure this thing out. So I'll get to that story on tomorrow's Current Sports. But until then, folks, again, we're out of time. We are on a 23-hour break. I want you all to be safe, be smart, and please be easy, people.